Welcome to the Coach Haas Podcast, powered by Sports Rehab PA, along with our sponsors.
By Optimizers Masszymes, 100% plant-based, naturally derived, best digestive enzyme blend out there right now. Highly concentrated with enzymes that digest proteins, starches, sugars, fibers, and fats. Helps to relieve indigestion, gas, bloating, and fatigue after meals. Take it with the meals to enhance the digestion and nutrient absorption. Also helps to improve recovery after hard exercise and hard efforts. So go to buyoptimizers.com and use code JUICY for 10% off. Kaelor Core Training Systems. The Kaelor Core Column Training is the next step in the evolution of strength development, preventing training injuries, and elevating core fitness to maximize athletic performance. The column core is used to help remap the central motor patterns for functional movements to ensure that the movement quality is efficient before loads and demands. Helps to increase strength, flexibility, and speed by 16%, reduces training injuries by 75%, works quickly in 6 short weeks, helps to strengthen the core and the back. Used with multiple Olympic-level athletes, NCAA athletes, as well as pro athletes in the NFL and other sports. Visit KaelorCore.com to find out more about the training systems. Also, check out Fit Life and Sports Rehab, Ivy Rehab, for understanding the systems as well in this facility.
This is a podcast that was inspired by our curiosity in several areas, and some of those include sports performance, sports injury, team training, recovery nutrition, ACL rehab and recovery, personal development, and fitness entrepreneurship. We also have a 15-minute segment called The 15-Minute Juice. It will be a continuation of the podcast, just in shorter clips, answering questions on physical therapy, rehabilitation, return to play after injury, training, and all things fitness. It's fast, it's concise, it's juicy. Okay, welcome to the Coach Haas Podcast. We're doing this. We're not going to really tell any of the Philadelphia fans, but we're doing this during the game 4 of the division series here. The Wild, no, it's a division series. Yeah. So, yeah. This is how dedicated we are to getting these things done and getting the information out to the masses. Tonight we have on Dr. Sean McMillan. He's the orthopedic sports medicine specialist. He's up at a Virtua Hospital, I believe, up in New Jersey. And he's here to talk tonight, not only just about the bare ACL. I know we had the surgeon on a few weeks ago, Mike. Actually, I don't even know, and I'm going to ask Dr. Sean this, if they're friends or not. I don't know if they know one another or not. Not just about the bare ACL, but we're going to, talk about maybe some other things that we're also seeing too. You know, the MPFL is a big one that you started to see up in Bucks County. So, that should be interesting. So I'm kind of curious to see what Dr. Sean says tonight compared to the other Dr. Sean, actually, ironically, right. That, what he said, see what the difference is. So, with that said, we want to welcome on Dr. Sean McMillan and thank you again for spending time on a Thursday evening during the Phillies playoff game.
Hey, listen, Joe, Mike, thanks for having me on. Something I've been looking forward to doing since Mike and I connected a couple months back. And Sean Keyes is actually a good friend of mine. So we'll see if we contradict each other or not. So
that's funny. There you go. So, yeah, I mean, kind of give us a little bit of a background. I know that when I did some researching on the page, it talked about some specialties, obviously shoulder, hip, knee, and then obviously like what we want to, get into is understanding a little bit more about the bare ACL, but kind of give us a little bit of background on you.
Yeah, so I'm an orthopedic sports medicine specialist. I'm working for Virtua Health in South Jersey, around Cherry Hill, Burlington County area. I've been in practice about 12 years now, going on my 12th year, and just sort of over time and through training and fellowship up at in Boston at UMass, I've really been drawn towards biology and biologic healing. I think that's really sort of where we're going and where we've been, just didn't realize it. So over time, my practice has grown and evolved with innovation in biology, with rotator cuff repairs, with ACLs and other sort of soft tissue injuries. And the bear, as you mentioned, has been one of those innovations that sort of just open up doors for our practice and our patients. And certainly within the region, we started out as, you know, the first in the state to do this. And now there's many, many doing it in the area. And I guarantee you, if we look back in 2-3 years and do a follow-up podcast, you're going to find almost every surgeon, every area is offering it. So it's pretty neat to see the innovation sort of grow out of our facility in Virtua.
That's awesome. So when you're talking about biological healing, can you explain a little bit more to, you know, if we have like parents or some of these, you know, teenagers listening to this, what does that entail?
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, I'm a surgeon, right? And I like to think that we heal people, but the truth is long before there were surgeons and anchors and screws, you know, the body had a way to heal itself, right? Think back to the 1800s, you know, someone broke a leg and either they lived and healed or they didn't, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the body has this innate ability to want to heal itself. So I think the things we're looking at with our science advancements is what can we do to sort of stimulate the body to get over the edge and heal itself, whether it's in the rotator cuff or in the ACL. Mike, one of the things we've talked about before is the ACL is the only ligament in the body that when it ruptures or tears, we haven't been able to let it heal on its own or sew back together. Everything else we do. We don't replace rotator cuffs. We don't replace MCLs. So the ACL, for whatever reason, just never healed. And there's some biology behind why that's the case. So we've sort of spent the last sort of several decades going in circles where we started off where we were repairing the ACLs and they failed. Then we were reconstructing them with synthetics, then ultimately with ligaments like the bone tendon bone or the quad tendon. And now we sort of go back to the beginning of the cycle with repairs, but adding some biology to it to make that repair actually heal. So it's kind of cool watching the evolution happen in real time.
Do you think that's because that collagen doesn't handle rotational force as well, so it's hard to anchor it or maybe almost like stitch it together where it might rotate, whereas a rotator cuff tendon, you're kind of anchoring one end and it's in there? Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, so from some of the histologic studies that have been done, it actually has more to do with the environment that the ligament's living in. So what we found actually is when you rupture an ACL, there's sort of some negative enzymes in the synovium of the knee joint that prevent the clot from forming. So if I cut you, you clot, you heal, your scar, and your skin goes over. The ACL, if it doesn't have the ability to clot, it can't heal. And the enzymes inside the knee actually prevented it from healing. So when we think about biologic healing inside the knee joint, one of the things that we've worked to do is find a way to prevent those negative enzymes from impeding the ACL's ability to heal. And that's sort of the mechanism behind the bear. And by sort of protecting that healing environment, the body does what it does best, which is, you know, find a way to connect two ends together.
Wow.
Does it take longer for this procedure for the bear ACL compared to others? Is it a longer maturation process?
You mean recovery or you mean the actual surgical time?
The actual surgical time.
No, so the actual surgery on game day, it's still under an hour to do, whether you're doing an ACL or whether you're doing a bear. When I say an ACL, I mean, bone, tendon, bone or quad
right.
Reconstruction versus a bear. That's all the same, you know, and in some senses, it may actually be a couple minutes quicker, depending on your comfort level. The recovery overall, the arc of healing, I tell everyone, it's a different pathway to get to where you want to be. But at the end of the line, at 9 months, if you have the strength in the leg to do what you need to do, I clear to go back to sports, whether it's a BTB, a quad, a hamstring, or a bear. But 9 months literature-based is pretty much standard for clearance to get back onto the field, at least competitively, no matter what type of ACL reconstruction you have. And truly, you know, time, and you guys know this, is just one factor. So I never tell a parent or an athlete, you're going back on the field at 9 months. I just say you're not going back before 9 months because, you know, there's a lot of healing that goes on inside the body that you can't really measure with, KT-1000 testing or single leg dips and things like that. So sometimes there's, you know, magic sauce going on inside that we don't recognize. And it's important that when we talk to our parents and our patients, we explain that, you listen, just because you look good on the outside, you don't necessarily know what's going on the inside. And I think being very literature based and quoting true, honest, hard stats is important, because at least gives parameters for our patients to understand why we're doing what we do when it comes to clearances.
I'm glad you touched on that, because that is something that we have to kind of clarify with some of the athletes and the parents when they get cleared from a surgeon. And we've had some of the other surgeons kind of expand upon that a little bit and saying that, you know, there's a time frame where they are cleared from, you know, you as a surgeon and what you could offer for them, but there's other phases. And that kind of comes into a lot of the other episodes that we've done on the podcast, you know, the neurocognitive, the mental, are you ready, you know, and then obviously the neuromuscular. You see some of the stuff I might have tagged you on LinkedIn and some of the testing and the performance metrics, you know, we're looking at. Can, you know, the individual demonstrate, you know, these shapes and positions under control to basically protect themselves? And we do see a lot of kids that are in these, you know, parents of ACL, you know, groups, and they're going back early and they're re-tearing. But, you know, from your perspective too, in those early phases, almost like maybe like a, you know, 0 to 8 week mark, some of these kids are feeling really good and they don't understand why they can't just go run and jump. So maybe also from a healing perspective, what are some of the things, you know, from your perspective, that why they can't do that? We know as a PT, some of the things that they can't demonstrate to do, you know, but in terms of some of the stuff healing, can you touch on that for them to understand?
Yeah, one of the best analogies I ever heard was when you think about baking a cake, right? You stick it in the oven and you can watch it rise and you can watch it sort of look firm on the top. But if the recipe says let it cook for 20 minutes and you take it out at 15 because you think it looks ready, you don't know what's inside, right? And then you know, you may not be happy with the outcome. So when you look at some of the literature that's out there, the knee heals in phases, and forgetting whether it's a bear or whether it's a BTB, there's certain things that happen. So the first sort of 3 months, there's this, you know, ingrowth and healing of the ligament or the native ligament back to the bone, right? And then sort of the next 3 months, what's going on actually is something called ligamentization, particularly with the grafts, where the body actually breaks down some of that native or some of that ACL ligament. So it's actually weaker. So right at 3 months, when you're starting to feel real good, your graft's actually it's as weak as point. And then the body starts to build it back up and sort of create this Spider-Man web around it that allows for the ligament to become part of the body. And then the part that you touched on a second ago there, from month 6 to 9, you start redeveloping what's called proprioception and the ability for the knee to know where it is in space. And again, thinking about that just from layman's terms, you get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, the light's off. You kind of can sense where the dog is, where the dresser is. You just kind of know it's there, right? Well, when you jump in the air to kick a soccer ball or dunk a basketball, the knee actually kind of knows when your foot's going to land on the ground again. You take that for granted, but that's called proprioception. And those fibers connect the ACL on the femur side or the thigh bone side to the shin side. And without those fibers being fully cognitively intact, you run the risk of re-tear and re-injury. And again, it's tough to really quantify that till it happens. And sometimes when it happens, it's a bad outcome. So that's why it's our job to educate and protect while the body heals.
And that's awesome. Because when we get, sorry, Joe, just real quick, when we get these kids coming in preoperatively to do some prehab, they say their knee feels really weird when they're moving it. Even if they have a good quad contraction, the knee's moving fairly well, that weird feeling, that's probably a good description as to maybe what's going on. So that's awesome, Dr. McMillan. Thanks for explaining that.
That's what I was going to say. That was the first time that I've actually heard it explained that way, yeah. And that makes a lot of sense. What other way would you do the procedure if they weren't a candidate for the bear ACL? What is your preference?
Yeah, so that's an awesome question, Joe. And I'll tell you, I really go out of my way to individualize the patient and the surgery. So I look at them for their size. I look at them for their sport. I look at them for their desired outcome for timing. And I say sport because we're talking about young athletes. But the truth is, Joe, if you tore your ACL tomorrow, you have a timeline to get back to work, right? If I have a 35-year-old laborer who's got to provide for his family or her family, and they need to go back to work at 6 or 8 weeks to be able to put food on the table, they're going to get a different ACL. So mm-hmm. I always try to look at what their needs are, what their reality is, because if they have to do something, it doesn't matter what I want. They're going to do what they have to do to survive or because they feel good. So I try to give them the right ACL. So it's a lot of understanding. For instance, if I have a young female soccer player, I'm hesitant to do a hamstring ACL on them because lots of literature out there talks about the loss of the hamstring strength in the contralateral leg, even with the increased risk of ACL injuries. If I have an individual that has a history of anterior knee pain, patellofemoral syndrome, patellotendinitis, Osgood-Schlatter syndrome, where they have problems already with their kneecap, I'm less likely to use a BTB and I might use a quad. Okay. And again, same thing with the bear. I can tell you that I'm probably close to about 50 or so bears, if not more than that now. I have a number of people, probably close to 6 or 7 now, that have had a BTB or a quad done on, say, their right leg. And they come in, and without me even having to talk about the bear, they're there for the bear. And the reason they're there is they'll tell you that the right knee or the left knee that was done first still feels good, but it doesn't feel like theirs. It doesn't feel fully natural, whether it's knee pain when they kneel, whether it just feels a little wonky, slips a little bit, and they all want the bear. And one of the reasons for that is the bear feels natural because it is. It's your own ligament. It's your normal fibers for proprioception. They're not sort of pseudo fibers. You're actually able to restore, if you look on an MRI, the normal angle of the ACL. So there's been histological and MRI studies done looking at the coronal plane, meaning the angle the ACL should sit, comparing your normal knee to the bear ACL, and they're symmetric. And no matter how good we think we are reconstructing ACLs, we never get that angle back. So it always feels a little bit different. And then the other part of that is, quite frankly, we know that when you replace the ligament, no matter how good we are, there's micromotion. And micromotion, you can feel inside innately, but you can't describe it really. But it does lead to the increased risk of arthritis. And when you look at some of the studies that have been sort of done in animal models, and part of the Bear 3 clinical trial, which my center and myself are a part of, we're actually studying to look to see if we can reduce the risk of arthritis in our patients over a 10-year model. And the reason that so is the animal models that were done found that in animals that had ACL surgery done with a bear, there was about a 30 to 40% reduction in arthritis on their knee. And that's huge for anyone listening that had an ACL done, say, 10 years ago. They know what I'm talking about. They're feeling the aches and the pains. They're developing arthritis, maybe getting gel shots. And it's just what we've always assumed is a natural byproduct of the injury. But what if it wasn't?
That's the elephant in the room that we're not even talking about with the girl that, you know, a boy or a girl that's 11, 12, 13 years old. Yo, I'm 50. Talk about, like, you're not even – no surgeries other than the meniscus. But, I mean, my knees feel it on certain days. I don't know what a kid's going to feel like at that age, you know, after having multiple surgeries done.
Yeah, and it's tough, right? And all we do is extrapolate because, look, every year the surgery, ACL surgery, reconstructions, whatever it might be, it gets better. But we know at the end of the day there's always a price to pay because it's still not natural. It's not what God gave us, right? So I try to drive that home and say, look, there's always something there. And if I can just minimize that risk by a fraction of a percentage, let alone 30 or 40%, that's huge. And I think as we follow these patients out, our clinical trial that we're part of is following them out for 10 years with MRIs to look at the risk of arthritis. And that's going to be something that becomes a gold standard perhaps down the road. Because, look, I got 12-year-old twins, and if they tore their ACL tomorrow, there's a lot of considerations to go into it. Boy, girl, you know, puberty, maturation, all these things. And not the least of which is I want them to be able to walk and play with their kids when they're older, not just get back on the soccer field next season.
Do you think that some of the, I get a lot of them saying that, you know, their knee will click or it feels, you know, kind of like off or something that comes with some of that micro movement. And I did kind of explain, I was like, look, you had surgery, your anatomy's not the way Mother Nature gave it. So there's always going to be a little bit off there, you know? And I do remember even, almost like the beginning of my career, hearing surgeons talk about trying to get that proper angle. Sometimes if they put it wrong, it can make the knee kind of tight in a way. I'm assuming that's gotten better over the years, but is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I mean, look, the literature, if you Google ACL and go in some of the journals, there's hundreds of papers written every year on the ACL. And we're still trying to wrap our brains around how to, you know, best practice, right? But to your point, whenever you have any surgery, knee, ankle, shoulder, you'll hear sounds. I tell everyone, ignore the sounds, because if you took your car to the shop every time you heard a sound, you'd find something wrong. You don't MRI it every time. But if there's pain associated with sounds, we'll deal with it. But yeah, those little micro motions and things that you learn just to adapt. You know, you talk to someone 20 years out from an ACL surgery, they say, yeah, it feels a little wonky. It's kind of got used to it, right? Because we all learn to adapt. And our job is just try and protect that knee as long as we can and preserve it before you get to that point where you might need a replacement when you get older.
Right. What are some of these techniques you're looking at? Like if you were not doing a bare ACL and maybe you were doing a another, you know, just a graft, are there other things you're doing that might help that, you know, heal? Are there certain, like, I know that some, you know, in rotator cuff repairs, do like a Regeniten patch or other things. Like, are there things like that that you're implementing?
Yeah. So if you're talking just about the knee, yeah, there's different things we do. You know, one, we try to match the ACL plane, like we've talked about a couple of times now, as anatomic as possible. So I think we do a good job of trying to restore anatomy. We do a good job of trying to back up our fixation. So we make sure that the graft can't slip. We'll add in for people with, say, that are very lax, hyperextension, we'll do extra procedures, something called an LET, which stands for lateral extra-articular tenodesis. Where basically we're just moving a piece of the IT band to reinforce the repair on the outside of the knee as well. So those are all things that we're doing. I'm not a huge fan of using allograft. Allograft means cadaver from someone else, but it has its role. So in those instances, I'll add a biologic scaffold to it, something called the BioBrace, which helps induce healing. So I think that graft has a better chance to incorporate into the body quicker and healthier. You know, time will tell if we're right or wrong on that, but we're always trying to find that edge to improve outcomes. And listen, Mike, I'll buy you a beer if I'm wrong, but there's no paper out there that says that an ACL is 100% success rate. So no matter what we do, no matter how smart we are, no matter how good we are, nothing is perfect. So we're still searching for that holy grail, and I don't know if we'll ever find it or not.
So we're obviously climbing this mountain with this epidemic. I mean, it's happening younger and younger, even with the UCL tears. You know, we have some surgeons up here working with, and, you know, 11, 12 years old. You know, what do you think from your perspective is going to take? Because we want to obviously implement this preventative. I tell all these parents and the kids that come in, like, look, your deficits are your deficits. Why don't we address it before the ACL tears? Because now we're further in the hole. Now we got to find the deficits. And when they come in, say they come in post-op, I don't even really have a chance to look at them. I don't really get to see how well they're moving until they actually start doing more weight bearing and actually doing things. And I noticed that sometimes it was a non-surgical leg that had more deficits. I had an athlete come in today that lacrosse, his tight, he tore on, his quad was massively larger than the other side. Now it's his pivot leg. And his ankles were extremely locked up. Never even knew, wasn't even aware. So I pointed it out. And there was no pre-screening that maybe if we could have seen these things as he developed, you know, he's 16, maybe he hit his peak height velocity and he had that growth spurt. And then no one really took into account that 3 to 6 month window after that growth spurt, like what was happening, you know? So What can we do as healthcare professionals to try to get preventative in front of? Because I feel like there's a lot of conversations with coaches and teams, and it's like in one ear, out the other. And, you know, we're trying to find a way that we could do something to help these kids, you know, in this community.
Mike, you're going to need another podcast to cover all that, man. That was a whole lot of stuff there. But so look, let's try to unpack it the best we can, right? Youth sports is fantastic and it's important, but it's changed. It's evolved from, you know, I'm 45. It's evolved from when I was a kid. It's evolved from when you were a kid, Joe. And Mike, you're a little younger than me, but it's evolved from when you were a kid. Well, gone are the days where you played everything and you went outside and you got home from school and you played till, you know, the sun went down and you just did any sport you could. Now everything is organized and everything is leagues and travel leagues and you know, rec teams and juniors and seniors. It's really become a big machine, and a lot of it is financially driven. A lot of it just is organizational driven. Yeah. So there's money involved, and parents will pay a lot of money for their kids to play, so they're going to play. And it is what it is. So as physicians, we can sit here and we can stomp our feet and say it's not the way it used to be. But the truth is, we need to adjust. So it's education of the parents and the trainers and the ATCs that cover the games.
Yeah.
Can't tell you how many kids come in. They're pitchers. And then when they're not pitching, they're catching, right? Like, what are you, this, they're throwing the ball every single time. So I really believe in cross training. I really believe in, you know, the three seasons of sports. I don't think any sport should be year round, no matter what it is, even if it's golf. I think you need breaks to work different muscle groups and work the brain in a different way as well. But the other things that have changed is, you know, puberty's hitting a lot earlier, and that's not for any other reason than that's the evolution of mankind. It's, yeah, you know, what we put in our foods, whatever it might be. We need to recognize that.
Yeah.
So I think training and screening is important. I think certainly when we do our physicals, particularly preseason physicals, we look, if I see a young gal that's got big valgus knees, I'm going to talk to mom and dad about orthotics, getting the because I think the feet we always overlook, but orthotics can help a lot. I talk about getting into a training program, and I'll send them to physical therapy for prehab. We work with a lot of our training partners, including Ivy and you know, the local ones here, to do screenings at schools. And hopefully we can catch a couple red flag kids.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, injuries are going to happen. And it's up to us to sort of recognize them ahead of time and spend a little more time, because you're not going to get a coach to change when, you know, as much as they want to. So it's awareness for parents and patients and things of that nature.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's been the way I've tried to been explaining it, saying that, you know, you have to stop seeing this as physical therapy, seeing that these foundational things are going to make you a better athlete. If, you know, you're all over the place standing on one leg, that's, you know, more seconds and more energy required to take a first step. You can't get faster unless you stabilize that. So these foundational things, even just body weight movement and understanding how to move, you're going to get faster. You're going to be more explosive. You're going to be more stable, be able to get to the ball a lot better. But that they're not taught that because they start grooming them at age 5. So if there was a way, like, look, just 20 minutes of these foundational things as part of your practices will go a long way. I mean, you see like some of the high intensity workouts that they do with CrossFit and obstacle course racing and all this stuff. You could get a lot done in 20 minutes. Just keep it moving, and then boom, that's part of your training.
Yeah.
Dr. Sean, what how are you a candidate for the Bear ACL? I know that there has to be certain parameters that you have to fall into. Kind of describe that again for us. Is that correct?
So it is, and it's an evolutionary tree, Joe. So what I mean by that is, what we thought you made a candidate someone 5 years ago has changed, to now.
Okay.
Sooner the better. It used to be you had to get the surgery done within the first 2 months of injury. There's plenty of papers out there now looking at people that are 3 months out, 4 months out, and still getting it done with success. I still believe, like any, you know, ligament or tendon, the sooner you get to it and fix it, the better. For me, the biggest candidate is someone who has to buy in, meaning that they have to want it. They have to understand that it's different. What I mean by that is, look, ACLs are devastating physically and mentally, right?
Yeah.
Because if for the first time, you're vulnerable in many instances. So if you are a 16-year-old athlete and you are in physical therapy and you're 2 weeks out, and the guy or girl next to you is also 2 weeks out, and they're doing totally different exercises than you, it messes with you, especially if you think you're going slower. So yeah, before we start the surgery, I explain to everyone, this is a different surgery and a different rehab for the first 6 to 8 weeks. And after that, those two ships are going to meld and go. But you need to understand that. And it's an awareness, on the therapy side, that I need you to buy into as well, because I see them every 4 to 6 weeks, maybe. You're seeing them 2 or 3 times a week, you know, for how many weeks? So your understanding of why things are different and your ability to explain and reassure and calm down the patient, it's worth its weight in spades. So for me, a candidate is someone who's interested in it, someone willing to buy in and listen, because there's protocols like everything else. And then obviously it's an understanding. And I try to make sure every patient, regardless of the surgery, walks out of there understanding what we're doing and why we're doing it. And that's why you mentioned websites before. On our website, we have so much information for our patients to go to and read to become informed, educated. I think they're a partner in this. It's not that they're a patient, they're a partner. So I do my part as their partner, and they do their part, which is, you know, understanding, rehab, and follow through. And then everybody makes out better in the end.
Does there need to be a piece on each side in order for the bare ACL to actually work?
Joe, it's like you're in my computer because we're writing a paper on this right now. So, you know, there just needs to be a stump. And the truth is, there's always a stump. You know, there's a lot of concern, or was concern, from surgeons. Is the stump big enough to accomplish this? And, you know, the paper that we're writing right now actually looks at almost 100 ACLs that were bears. Regardless of the size of the stump, the outcomes are the same. So as a surgeon, you just need to be able to get in there and do what you're supposed to do to place your sutures into that remaining ACL tissue. The body will do the rest. The body is really smart. Sometimes just because we can't understand something doesn't mean that it's not happening. So I think there's a little bit of trust in that, just like the sun's going to come up tomorrow. And I think that knowing what we know and the science and the data that's there, we can accomplish a lot. So as long as there's something left, Joe, we can pull this off.
Okay.
The component that makes the bare ACL, that scaffold, you know, I guess it's like a synthetic. Is there, you know, is there something that everybody's using? Is it like one product that you would use, or are there multiple? Is that something that's evolving? What actually consists of that? And then, you know, is that something that is tested to make sure that it, like, you know, won't rupture or it's durable? Like, how do you, you know, like, clear it to make sure, all right, we're going to put this in someone's body, you know?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So it's actually not synthetic. The bear is made out of bovine collagen.
That's right.
Okay, so bovine is something that our body is very compatible with. Think about heart valves. Think about rotator cuff patches, the BioBrace I talked about before. All these things have some sort of bovine collagen derivative, and the body recognizes it and induces new tissue to grow based upon it. So that's pretty well tried and true over the last three decades. So what the bear does is it actually resorbs and goes away in about 6 to 8 weeks. It acts like a scaffold for cells to migrate across, right? So think about the Bering Strait, you know, that big block of ice that went across connecting two continents. Same thing. If you put the bear in there and it's in contact with the native femoral wall or the native tibia and the native ACL, those cells from the ACL will grow across and heal. And it takes a little bit of understanding of science and different sort of pathology that's there. But it's been tried and true, MRI proof, histologic proof. We're writing a paper looking at the histology. And we know that based upon the histological biopsies we've taken, that the ACL tissue that's there after the body heals is actually native ACL tissue. It regenerates. Which is exactly what you want your body to do. It is tested. When you think about all the cool things that we do, Mike, to help the body heal, the bear actually has the most level one and level two data out there of any orthopedic implant from a biologic standpoint that we put in, period, over the last 20 years. So think about that. So even though it sounds new to you or Joe, or, you know, maybe the listeners on the radio, it's been out there for a decade, studied, tested. And Martha Murray, the woman who invented it, gave basically her life's devotion to this to make sure it was ready to go before releasing it to the masses. So, you know, that's something that sometimes we take for granted. You know, we just see something new that's out there and assume it's ready to roll. This was made sure it was ready to roll beforehand.
Wow. Are there any, like, contraindications? If maybe someone has an autoimmune disease or some type of blood clotting disorder or something, would there be times where you wouldn't do that because maybe it would affect the way the cells migrate?
Yeah, so we talked about people that have sort of, you know, cow allergies or, you know, meat allergies, things like that. That's always something we want to be very cautious with. We don't do this over top of cadaver grafts or autografts, meaning if you blew your ACL previously and we use your bone, tendon, bone or someone else's bone, tendon, bone in you, you can't put the bear over top of that. It doesn't work like that. But other than that, there really aren't many contraindications to this. Which make it pretty desirable because it gives us one more sort of quiver. Someone asked me before, do I do it on everyone? No, I mean, I don't. I did about 120, 130 ACLs last year, and about probably 30 or 40 of them were bears. So about a quarter, right?
Okay.
Because again, I talk about matching up the surgery to the patient. And if you look at how many were BTBs versus quads versus cadaver grafts, each one has a bar, right? And it's about identifying the right surgery for the right patient to give the overall benefit to everyone that comes in there. It's not just a meal where no matter what you come in, you're getting hamburger and fries. You're getting the surgery meant for you. And I think that's important to have that discussion with the patient.
Are you doing anything with this type of biological healing, maybe that might help tendinopathy, any of those type of things, and trying to heal that tissue and maybe regenerate some of that tissue that we know that kind of dies in a sense?
Yeah. So that's a great question. And the answer is yes. That has nothing to do with the bear, but
Right.
you mentioned some other, products out there that are known for regenerating tendons. And we do that all the time, whether it's the rotator cuff, the patella tendon. We've done triceps, we've done all different things. We publish papers on patella tendons and triceps. It is the way of healing, the way of the future is to give the body a chance to heal and just needs that little nudge. You don't need to do something heroic. And the body has a good way of healing itself.
Wow. How are you feeling about BFR from a surgeon's perspective? Because I know I got certified in it, using it, and the specialist I worked under, he's heavy in the research, Dr. Trent Nessler. He's out using his the Dorsavine testing and all that, and saying that there are some stuff looking to see if that blood flow restriction mechanism maybe might help the healing of the ACL a little sooner. You guys looking at anything like that?
So I'm a big fan of BFR, and I feel like I've been a fan of BFR before it was popular, not because I'm special, but because I actually worked with a bunch of bodybuilders as
Nice.
patients, and they were doing this, for the last 20 years, it feels like, in some way, shape, or form. So the idea of, a blood deprivation to a muscle and then flooding it again is not new, but it does have benefits there when done right and done in the right intensity.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to hurt someone.
Right.
I haven't looked at it specifically for healing the ACL ligament, but we certainly know it helps with the quad, and that is the protection mechanism for the knee. So.
Nice. Well, it seems like it's working in the clinic because these kids was noticing their quads are getting bigger. So I started literally almost like day one with them, and they're appropriate and just build it up. So every day they come in and get it on. And so, yeah, I mean, I train with them myself, so I think it helps.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's get on. You were just talking about testing, which was a good segue into my question. What are your metrics that you're looking for to hear from physical therapy in order for you to feel as though that you can say that this athlete is cleared for return to play? We know that you're spending the least amount of time with them, so you're relying on other people's information. Are you relying just on a single leg hop test? What is the information or the metrics that you would like to have in front of you before you determine whether the athlete is ready to return to play?
Yeah, it's a good question because it's not always the same answer. It
Right.
depends on their sport. It depends on, other factors that go with it. So yeah, I'm looking at hop testing, single leg. I'm looking at the ability to do single leg squats, stance phase. I actually make them do it in my office. So even though your report gives me information, we have a long hallway that we'll have them go down. I'll watch them jump. I'll watch them do single leg stances, and I'll look to see them wobble. Then I love testing the other leg too, because
Yeah.
that other leg usually wobbles a little more. I'm looking at strength compared to the contralateral leg. I'm a big believer in quad girth, so I like to measure the quad in the office just to get a sense and show them, look, this is how much is missing. There's this great picture floating around on Twitter right now of Kyler Murray, the quarterback for the
Yeah.
Arizona Cardinals. So
Yeah.
he's about 9 months removed from his ACL. And it's he actually pulls his pant legs up and flexes his quads. They're jacked. But you can see is the ACL leg, in spite of therapy 3 times a day, 7 days a week,
Yeah.
is still smaller noticeably than his good leg. This is
Yeah,
a pro
interesting.
athlete, prime of his career with everything going 9 months out. You can still see the deficit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are important things to look at, size, deficit, whatever it might be. I try to brace everyone if I can. I understand the insurances and otherwise sometimes don't allow it. I know the literature kind of skews left and right, guys, on whether or not you need a brace or don't need a brace. I think anyone who's skiing certainly needs a brace. I think anyone who's going back to a contact sport like football, soccer, there's just a sense of security putting it on at least the first year or two. There's plenty of literature coming out from overseas, Australia and otherwise, talking about ideally to hold someone out 2 years from sport for an ACL. Good luck trying to do that in America, where
right?
everyone thinks
yeah, right.
go back at 4 months because they know someone who went back at 4 months and did great. So the point is, you know, more is better. So the more information we can get from multiple different angles, I think each one of those ties into what they're trying to do. And ultimately, no matter how much information we have, the body's still a crapshoot sometimes.
Very true. Awesome. Mike, what you got there?
No, this was all awesome stuff. I know we were at the top of the sixth. Like, Phillies are winning by one run there. So,
okay.
Gotta
all
go.
Right, update. Yeah. Well, by the time this comes out, because it isn't live, by the time this comes out, everyone already know they'll either be greasing the poles at Frankfurt and Cotman, or, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's a division series. They gotta get out there and party, you know, anywhere they can. So – Dr. Sean, we really appreciate your time. This is extremely valuable. What we try to provide is credibility by bringing on the surgeons. And so they're not just hearing it from us. They're hearing it from the top. So this is a really neat, tier here. We have the surgeon, we have the PT, we have the strength coach, all talking about this and all being on the same page. And everyone that we brought on is speaking the same language. So it really does help us get that message across, because the important thing, like you mentioned earlier, is it's the education to the parents, to the coaches, to the athletes. That's why we do this.
Listen, I appreciate you guys having me on. I think the more we can educate our patients, the more they're going to seek us out to ask questions. And I think it's our job just to provide information, then ultimately come to a team decision on how we're going to, rehab, prehab, and then ultimately return to sport.
Yeah. And I mean, I love the ability to be able to network with you, just even like shooting you a text and asking you a question and just how responsive you are, and just easy to send your report and knowing that you can like check it out. I mean, that's huge. And that goes miles for, the patients, especially some of these parents. I mean, seeing their kid deal with this is very devastating for them, it's tough. And this is also sometimes the toughest thing that some of these kids have gone through. You have a teenage girl. This is the hardest thing they've gone through so far. So it's a big deal. And when they know they have multiple people in their corner, it's very reassuring, So that's why we try to put as much stuff up, even sharing it on LinkedIn and doing this, because the more people have access to this, because there's a lot of misinformation out there, especially in the world of social media. This just kind of goes off of, how you like social media, and even your colleague, Dr. Mike Redler posted something about how he likes social media, but, just about getting the right information out, and there's a lot of nonsense out there. So we try to skew through that and get people in front of the right information, So we really appreciate your time on this. It was awesome.
No worries. Gentlemen, thanks for having me on, and good luck. Go Phils.
Yep. Go Phils. Have a great night, boys. Thank you.
Good night.